Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff, only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk? Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Welcome to the Junk Refund Show. I am sitting here in Rockville, Maryland, at the parking lot of a strip mall where my favorite Subway sandwich is, having just eaten one of their new honey chicken something something special sandwiches for lunch. And I'm excited to be on the radio with all of you and let you know what's going on in the world of junk removal, because it's always exciting and there's always something new going on. And boy, do we have some stories to tell you. So, it's been a busy few weeks. Thanks always to Don Newsom and his brother Doug and the BBS Radio Network. They do a great job as our producers and the owners of the network. We're proud to be on their network and happy to be here talking to you about all things junk removal. So, every once in a while, in sales, which I've been in for 40 years, you make a big sale and you just feel like you own the world. And that's what just happened about 30 minutes ago, where we went over and did an estimate for a lady that a realtor referred us to, who went through a pretty sticky divorce over the last 18 months and is now in the process of downsizing from what's a beautiful big five-bedroom home with lots of space in it to what'll be a two-bedroom, let's say, condo. And there's just a lot of big furniture and other stuff that needs to go. So we just went over, did an estimate for her, gave her 10% off because the realtor referred us, gave her another 10% off if she paid in advance for the job, which you don't have to do, but we've always given people an extra discount if they paid in advance. And she said, yep, and handed me the credit card, and whammo, we ran the card. And you got to love it when on your phone you get those words that says sale approved. So anyway, I'm on cloud nine right now, feeling pretty good about this. We're going to start this job the beginning of next week and try to get it done by May 1st. And aside from just the junk removal needs that are there, there's a lot of very good furniture that is not going to make it into a two-bedroom condo from a five-bedroom single-family home. So there's a lot of stuff we're going to be putting up for sale, which is also exciting. And we're just having a good time with that. So I'm feeling good. That's the world of junk removal. I'm headed up to Ellicott City, Maryland, about a half hour north of here, when I'm done with the show, to do some hauling away of some scrap metal that's up there, some lawnmowers and some other stuff. And we'll get that taken care of. And we're just busy and off we go. I hope everybody had a wonderful Easter. I put down on my little outline of the show today, the ninth thing I was going to talk about was Easter. So you'll hear a little bit about that. I had a wonderful Easter, and I hope you all did too. I hope you had a great weekend and that it was a special weekend for you. So I'll start off with, to those of you who either watch those TV shows about hoarders, or maybe you're a hoarder yourself, or maybe you're married to one or related to one, or you're trying to help one or whatever, it's an interesting psychological phenomenon. We, in the last couple of weeks, we've been cleaning out a home in Reston, Virginia, where a gentleman from Latin America, who was apparently a painting contractor, just loved to buy tools. And what he did was he bought so many tools, spray painters, compressors, circular saws, cordless drills, you name it. He filled up his house with tools. Now his wonderful daughter, who is a single mom, doing a great job as a single mom, his wonderful daughter wants to get this single-family home remodeled so they can rent it out so that they can she can then take her dad into her townhome a few miles away and have him live with her. And this wonderful lady is just trying to get this house decluttered. So she hired us a few weeks ago. I gave her a special deal, a bigger discount than I normally do, because I just wanted to help her out. And my heart goes out to these single parents who are literally trying to take care of their parents. And I wanted to help her. Well, we've done that. To give you an indication of what this is like, if you roll up the garage door, which the automatic feature was not working when we first showed up. Since then, it's been repaired, and now it's working. If you just bend down and grab the handle on the garage door and pull it straight up, you are looking at a wall, a solid wall, 7 feet high, of tools stacked up all together. Extension cords, power tools, saws, drills, I mean, compressors, you know, everything you can imagine. Any tool that DeWalt has ever made, there's like five of them in this garage. And that's just the garage. Then you've got a couple of rooms in the right off the entryway in the front of the house. You got a room in the basement, all full of stuff. And I think what he did was he went around and bought stuff at yard sales and flea markets and whatever. And he told himself, hey, this is a good deal, so I'm going to make money if I buy this. And he bought it. And what he did was he spent money. He didn't make money. He spent money. And then the item sat in the house for years, never touched, apparently, because that's the way all this stuff looked. So for the last few weeks, we have been making a beeline of runs to the local scrap metal yard where you get, you know, wire and extension cords and, you know, tools that are broken that have, and you know, like an electric drill and the drill is rusted and busted up or something. We cut the wire off of there and recycle that at the scrap yard. And then we put the drill in, you know, the bin over there for all the small tools. Well, we've made a couple of thousand dollars approximately just off of scrap metal runs on this job. They had 13 long aluminum extension ladders out in back of the house that were all stacked up on the ground. 13 of them. We ended up selling 9 of the 13. We sold them for $100 a shot. That's $900. The lady gets 35% of that sale, which is around $300. So she's making money off of stuff, and we have a bunch of stuff still listed, thousands of dollars of stuff listed for sale, that if it sells, she'll get a percentage of it, and she'll get money coming back. There is also, on the side part of the yard, there is a metal trailer with two jet skis on there. And it looks like they've been sitting for a number of years, so they may not be worth anything. But that caught my eye pretty quick, too. We're in the process of getting that hauled off and get it to somebody who knows these things to see what they think about, you know, getting something done with this. So we're excited about that as well. Anyway, there's a couple of jet skis there. I currently right now have two SUVs that I'm using that were thrown away at hauling jobs. We have ended up paying the people that hired us a few bucks for the cars, and then have been able to keep them and put a little bit of money into them and make them run and whatever, and everybody wins. So we've had a pretty good day, but nothing in when you own your own business, nothing makes your heart pump stronger and faster and with more joy than a big sale. And that's what happened to us an hour ago. And I'm still just thrilled with this situation. So anyway, that gives you an indication what's going on in my life. The psychology of a hoarder, we should probably talk about for a second. Just because you get a good purchase on something doesn't mean you should buy it, and it doesn't mean you're making money. You're actually spending money to acquire the item, and then what do you do with it? It's not so much the cost of the item and what kind of a deal you get. It's what is the item good for? Not so much if it's a good item. What is it good for? You get a lot of people, let's just be honest, guys, a lot of men out there hang on to 2x4s and various pieces of wood from a former construction project and stick it in the garage or in the shed, and then they tell their spouses, hey, honey, you know, we're going to use this on a project someday. Besides, that's a good piece of wood. It's not a question of the quality of the wood. It's a question of what is it good for? And if you can't answer that question, then you're hanging on to a piece of wood that you're never going to use, but you're thinking that you will. And just because it's a clean, good piece of wood doesn't mean you should hold on to it. There are a lot of typewriters sitting around Washington, D.C. in homes that are probably still good typewriters that probably work. But what are they good for in a world of electronic word processing? The answer is nothing. They're not good for anything, even though they're good typewriters. So you got to learn to make sure you understand the difference when you try to declutter your homes and your lives. Make sure that you understand the difference between whether the item is good versus what is it good for. And if you can't come up with something that it is good for, that it should be used for now, you should probably donate it, toss it, get rid of it, give it away, whatever, even if it's a good piece of wood. Who cares? And let's be honest, if you decided to build a doghouse, you know, you're not going to go back to the garage and grab that old piece of wood, even though it's a good piece of wood. Your pride won't let you do that. You're going to go down to Home Depot and for 30 or 40 bucks buy, you know, some good quality lumber, because that's the way you build things, and you'll go ahead and build the doghouse, and it'll all be done, and you'll end up with more good wood that you're going to stick in the garage, because one of these days you're going to use that wood too. And now all you're doing is adding to your pile of unused wood that you won't get rid of because you say it's good wood. And no, the question is, what is it good for? And if you can't answer that question, that's a clue that you shouldn't be holding on to it. So there is a psychology involved as well that you have to be careful of in working with people who have this tendency. Coming in kind of over the top of them and being the hero and telling them what to do is the exact opposite of what you really should do. These folks want to feel like nobody's pushing them, nobody's putting them down, nobody's making fun of them. They want to be able to move at their own pace and do things at their own pace, a pace that they're comfortable with. A case in point, we've helped a couple of family members clean out some apartments that they've had for a number of years. About twice a month I go down. I'll be going down there again tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Twice a month I go down, and they sort through some old letters and documents that are still left in these old apartments that they used to have. They don't live there anymore. They haven't lived there for years. But for a couple of years now, we've been going down and helping them get these cleaned out. Last week, I was down there. They pay us a certain amount of money for the amount of time, you know, hour and a half or something that I'm there. And last week, I basically swept up the floor while they looked through some stuff, some letters and cards and other stuff that they had gathered over the years. And one of them picked up, you know, something and turned to their other family member and said, hey, this is from 2010. Would you like to look at it? And the other person said, no, I'm good, thanks. And then they put that in the trash pile. Well, in an hour and a half, they created two more bags of trash to be hauled out. So I took those two bags of trash, threw them in the pickup truck, and charged them the fee for the time that was spent being there. And it's they comment just about every time that I'm there. One of them will comment and thank me profusely for being a patient guy and would say, there's no way we would have gotten all this stuff out of here and gotten this organized without your patience and your help. And sometimes the best thing you can do is keep your mouth shut and just let nature take her course and let people work through their accumulation of cards, letters, gifts, invitations that have come to them in the last 60 years, and let them decide what they want to do with those. That way, when the process is all done, they have the peace of mind that they didn't throw away anything that shouldn't have been thrown away, and that they held on to what they should have held on to, and that everything worked out the way that it should have. I hope that makes sense. So sometimes patience is the issue, and especially with a hoarder, you just have to be patient and be there and support them and let them work through it and maybe give them a tip, you know, a little hint every once in a while on what to do. But sometimes you just have to be patient and let nature take her course and let these people kind of work it out. And that patience is not always easy to do. It's very easy sometimes in people in our business to walk in and say, hey, sir, you should just do this. Get rid of that stuff, you know, whatever. That's exactly the opposite of what some of these people want to hear. We were helping these folks, this same couple of family members, a few months back, clean out a storage unit. And one of them had spent some time in Boston, and they pulled out a framed 8x10 autographed picture of Ted Williams and Carl Yastrzemski in a photo together. I mean, it's amazing what you find in some of these storage units, you know, and that's part of the fun of doing what we do is just what you find and how it all comes to be. A couple of minutes on, getting the junk out of your life. One of the ways to do that also is to celebrate your own birthday. There are an awful lot of people out there who kind of shy away from their birthday because they look at it and go, oh, crap, I'm another year older. You know, especially as they're getting older and older, which is simply what happens. It's like, oh, man, this day's back again, you know. I'm the opposite. One of the funnest birthdays I had was when I flew to Merida, Mexico, to go to one of our church temples down there. I had no idea where Merida, Mexico was or if it even existed. I'd never heard of this city named Merida before. And it's in the Yucatan Peninsula, about 180 miles from Cancun, if I remember right. And I turned 60 when I made that trip and had one of the funnest times of my life. There's a good chance that this year in about another 10 days, it's going to be birthday time again for me, and I want to do something special for it, and I've got an idea in mind, and we'll see if it comes to fruition. I kind of think it will, but we'll check it out and see, and I'll update you on that next week. But the bottom line is your birthday is the one day of the year. It's the one day out of 365 that you have every right to go celebrate you and your life and what you've learned and what you've accomplished and the people that you love and all that good stuff. It's the one day a year to celebrate your birth. Now, look at what Christ's birth means to Christians and others around the world. December 25th is a major day where we celebrate Jesus Christ's birth. Well, you were born too. And you're not as cool as he was, but you're an awfully cool person, and you do a lot of good too. And I sometimes don't understand why people kind of look at their birthday as a negative time of the year, when it's a chance to throw yourself a party and celebrate the fact that you've been alive for another year on this planet and have learned a bunch of stuff in the last 12 months that you probably didn't know in the preceding time. So my plea is to make your birthday special. Go out of your way. Do something big, something fun, something that is memorable, so that you can look back on your birthday the way I look back on my 60th, and I go, man, that was a cool year. That was a cool birthday. Make it memorable. That's the end of my speech on birthdays. All right, we'll take a break real quick. We'll be back in about a minute. You're listening to the Junk Refund Show on the BBS Radio Network. I'm your host, Alan Cook.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. I'm your host, Alan Cook, coming to you from the parking lot of the Crabs Branch Strip Mall in Durwood, Maryland, just outside of Rockville, which is just outside of Washington, D.C., on a wonderful day where things are going great, and I'm very excited, and I'm just sitting here having just eaten my Subway sandwich. I'm sitting here in the shade doing the radio show before I take off for Ellicott City and pick up a bunch of scrap metal from a customer up there. I want to mention our radio vouchers. We do a special deal only if you call in during the show, leave your name and number with our producer, Don, and then he'll send it to me afterwards, and then we'll give you a special discount, which is a pickup truck of junk removal for $79 that is normally $229. That is the best deal that we make for a pickup truck load of stuff. It's good only in the Washington, D.C. area. We can't fly to Kansas City and do a pickup truck load of stuff for you for $79. But we can in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. And this is a great deal. We mention it on the show. It's only available if you call into the show. 888-627-6008. Wait a minute. I may have got that wrong. 888-627-6008. 6007. I'm not sure. Don's going to have to hop in and tell me. 62. I can't remember which one it is. Anyway, call into the show and we will give you the radio voucher special deal where I will send you a special link that will allow you to get a special deal on a pickup truckload of stuff. 888-627-6008 is the number. So that talks about the radio vouchers. I want to talk a little bit about silver and silverware. Yesterday, we did a job for, in fact, we're in the process in the next few days, doing a job for a lady who is also downsizing, who gave me two wooden boxes of silver. These boxes are the containers that you display the silver in. That, you know, the lids lift up. They're kind of horizontally shaped, kind of a landscape shape as opposed to a portrait type shape. And they hold, you know, 100 pieces of silverware. Sometimes the silver in these boxes is sterling silver. And if that's the case, on the back of each item, it will either say the word sterling printed into the metal, or it will have the number 925. Printed into the, stamped into the metal. That tells you that it's sterling silver. those two items. So that's what you're looking for. If you get a case or a box of this type of silverware, which will have maybe 100 pieces in it, say, service for, say, 8 people, something like that, that'll probably sell, because we've done this a couple of times, for about $2,000 to a jeweler who buys sterling silver. That's the value of doing it straight with a jeweler. You can sell it to the public for maybe 10 to 20% more. I tend to just go straight to the jeweler and I walk out with a check. The ones we got yesterday, so I was excited because I got two of these yesterday. I thought, well, this is cool. And I looked on the back and it said Reed and Barton, R-E-E-D and Barton. That is a manufacturer of silverware. Goes back many years in the United States. Very well-known name in the silverware cutlery industry. And if it is not sterling silver, it will say, silver plate. It'll have the word plate by itself. It won't say sterling. It'll have maybe some other number. It'll have maybe a trademark logo stamped in it from the manufacturer. But you will not find the number 925 anywhere, and you will not see the word sterling anywhere. That means it's basically regular silver plate stuff, which is in this case worth about $200, maybe one-tenth of what it would be worth if it was sterling silver. So just remember, sterling silver, both jewelry and plateware and dinnerware and anything like that made of sterling silver will have the number 925 stamped in the back of it somewhere, or it will have the word sterling stamped on it, and that's how you know that it's legit stuff. So we walked away yesterday with what I was hoping would be maybe $4,000 worth of sterling silver. Instead, it's about $500 worth of silver plate stuff and stainless steel stuff that looks really nice. But looking at on eBay at these particular brands and this many pieces, these pieces will sell anywhere from $1 to about $3 per piece. So if you have 100 of them, you're gonna look at maybe $100 to $300 worth of stuff. We listed one set for $250, the other set for $295. We've already got people interested in them, and we just picked it up yesterday afternoon. This is something I'm kind of proud of, just using an iPhone with Excel. I have a master spreadsheet of stuff that is for sale based on the date, the client, the item, and the price that we listed it for electronically. Then as somebody comes in and buys something, we fill in the next column with the price that we were paid, and then we fill in the next column with the percentage that goes to the client, and that's how we track all the stuff that we have up for sale. Right now, that number is around $5,500 worth of stuff that's for sale. Now, can you imagine if all of that stuff sold this afternoon, in a best-case scenario, we'd have a $5,000 day. If you get that number up to $20,000, you can have a $20,000 day. And if you get it to $100,000, you can have a $100,000 day. And wouldn't it be great if you eventually had, across the country in your network of franchises, $1 million worth of stuff constantly for sale? That's a pretty good number. And so I'm excited about, as I continue to, get these tools from this house in Virginia, or get automobiles, or get furniture, or whatever it is we're doing, that amount of stuff that is currently for sale is another stream of income for you if you put stuff up for sale as a junk removal business, which most of them don't do. In fact, I don't think any of them do it except us. If they do put it up for sale, they're doing it for themselves, not for their customers. We like the idea of doing it not only for our customers, but also for ourselves, and everybody makes money and everybody wins. So this house that I just came from has a lot of very good furniture in there that is really clean and well taken care of that we will be putting up for sale. And I'm sure it will be thousands of dollars worth of stuff that we add to our inventory. So my next goal is to get the items for sale from around $5,000 up to $10,000, and then to take it from $10,000 to $20,000, and then 20 to 50, and then from 50 to 100. And when we get it at 100, I'll probably buy, you know, Subway sandwiches for everybody that calls into the show or something. We'll do something fun that way. But anyway, that's the difference between silver and silverware. Look for the word sterling printed in the back or printed on the latch of the bracelet or whatever it might be. Look for that or the number 925, and that tells you that it's sterling silver. If you're not sure, take your silver down to a reputable, either a silversmith or just someone that buys gold and silver, a coin shop or a jeweler that will buy gold and silver. They can tell it apart really quickly and weigh it and pay you on the spot for anything you take in. So if you're looking for a way to make some extra money, look around your homes, offices, cars, wherever, dens, you know, attics, and look for anything silver that says sterling or 925 on the back of it, and then call in the show and tell us what happened, and we'd love to tell your story as well. Every once in a while, maybe 2 to 3 times a year, we get cars that go through our hands. We've had 3 of them go through our hands in the last 9 months. I'm going to tell you about one situation. We got a call from a young lady whose mother referred her to us because she had an automobile, a nice SUV that she was driving, and apparently took a turn, came around a corner too tightly, and clipped some kind of a pole, and that pole scraped the fender over the passenger side rear wheel and also caught the wheel. And it bent the wheel outwards, from the bottom outwards, about 20 degrees. There is some kind of I'm going to call it a positioning rod that goes inside the back of the car along the axle, keeps the wheel straight, I guess. We'll just say it that way. That rod got bent, and it needed a new, basically, rear suspension is what it needed. Well, she contacted us, said, "What can you do anything with this car?" She, in the meantime, went out and got a matching, you know, white SUV for herself, a really nice young lady. And we did the research and looked at what people were selling similar cars for, found out what the repair cost would be on hers, factored everything in. And the bottom line is, you know, she was hoping she had a car still worth 10 to 12,000 miles. But the reality is she had a car worth maybe $3,000 to $5,000, and that's only if you paid a few thousand dollars to get it fixed. So we called the scrap metal yard. If we had taken it to them, they would have paid us $500 for it. We send it into one of these companies that'll buy your car over the web if you just send them the VIN number. We did that, and we got an offer of $1,200, but only if the car ran. And it was intentionally low because of the miles that were on it and the fact that it needed some help on the rear suspension. So we ended up taking it to my mechanic, who took a look at it. He ended up buying it for $2,000, and $500 of that went to us, $1,500 went to our client. That is about 5 to 6 times what she would have gotten had we sold it the other ways to a scrapyard or sold it to one of these online buyers. So she came out of it ahead. She got more money than she normally would have gotten. We got $500 on it and just basically arranged the sale, and everything worked out well. We have had cars that we have sold for people. Somebody in Washington, D.C. that retires from the government is moving back to Kansas, doesn't want to take their car with them, and the family flies up from Fort Lauderdale, contacts us. We go in and clean out the garage and some other stuff. And then they say, "Oh, by the way, can you help us with the car too?" They gave me the signed title to the car and the keys to the car, sight unseen, the very first time I met with them. And I drove home a Chrysler Sebring Limited convertible and parked it in front of our house. The bottom line is they had been trying to sell it in the Washington Post for $10,500. It wasn't working. I asked the gentleman who was retiring from the government, "What's the bottom line of how much you want to get out of this car?" He said 9,900. I said, okay, we'll try to sell it for you, and we'll take anything above 9,900. How does that sound? He said, that sounds great. We put it up for sale electronically. An attorney from Michigan, from the Detroit area, saw it and offered us $10,850 for it, and then flew to Maryland and drove the car home. And we made about $900 to $1,000 on selling a car that we didn't own. And the gentleman got his $9,900 that he wanted from the sale of the car, didn't have to do any of the work, and sold it for more than what he was trying to sell it for locally in the Washington Post. Now, there's a good example of the power of using technology to help you increase your sales. There are people halfway across the country that'll pay you more for it than the people locally in your own neck of the woods. But you have to get the word out that it's available, and you do that electronically. So everybody wins. This white SUV is one of the last ones that we did, and everybody wins in a situation like that, and that's just pretty cool. I want to do a shout-out to Goodwill. The folks at Goodwill are terrific because we frequently will take them a bunch of stuff around the country. We've visited them, donate stuff. They give us donation receipts. We give that to our customers, and the customers know that their stuff didn't just go to a landfill. Most recently, we cleaned out a storage unit for a really cool couple that before COVID owned a couple of businesses, a boutique shop and some clothing shop and some other stuff. And they ended up with a bunch of inventory. They put it in a storage unit. COVID came and just kind of killed their business. And it's been sitting in the storage unit for 5 years. And they wanted to stop paying the bill. So I don't blame them. So we went over last week and cleared out their storage unit, donated a bunch of it to Goodwill, got them donation receipts. All their stuff is going to make it to a good home. And it is not the kind of stuff we're going to mess around selling because it's, you know, $5 and $10 stuff. And we don't give a refund to anybody unless we sell something for $20. So we don't want to mess around with the little stuff, but Goodwill does. So we were grateful that we could just go straight in, unload a couple of pickup truck loads of stuff to them. They can take it and do, you know, put it up for sale, do whatever they want to do with it. And at least the stuff doesn't get thrown away. It ends up in somebody else's hands, and the customer gets a donation receipt that they can use for tax purposes for 2025. So we love the good folks at Goodwill. We use them all over the country. We also use Salvation Army. We use Habitat for Humanity, the Restore stores that they have. And we also use, you know, local donation places, thrift stores and other places around the country. But Goodwill stores are everywhere, and they do a great job, and most of them, some of them take furniture, some of them don't, but by and large, they are there and have done a fabulous job for us for years, giving us a place to take stuff so that it doesn't end up in a landfill and someone else can put it to use, which is the way we prefer to do it. We'll come back in a minute for the last segment of the show. You're listening to Junk Refund Show. I'm your host, Alan Cook, talking to you from a parking lot here in Durwood, Maryland. After having just made a big sale, I'm a very happy camper and happy to be doing the show, which we love to do, Thursdays at 3 o'clock on bbsradio.com. We'll be back in a minute after we take the last break, and we'll tell you some more good stories from the world of junk removal. We'll be right back.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. I'm your host, Alan Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. That is our nationwide phone number. That is our name. That is our website, 1-800-JUNK-REFUND.com. That is our Gmail, our email account, 1-800-JUNK-REFUND@gmail.com. And the whole reason the word refund is involved is because a refund is something you get back after you pay for something. When you pay us to haul away your junk, if we end up selling some of it, you get some money back. And we have a lot of fun doing that. We have a lot of fun trying to make extra money off of stuff. And it's a win for everybody involved, and that's the way we like to do our business. I want to talk about paint and hazardous waste. We get asked this question a lot when we go to clean out somebody's house, especially their garage. The local dumps out in the Washington, D.C. area, they're very, very economically, environmentally conscious. And so we're not supposed to take any, you know, hazardous waste stuff into the dump as a commercial company. But then they make exceptions, like once a week we can take paint in. We have to pay to get rid of it, but they'll let us take paint in. They let homeowners from the county take this stuff in for free, and they take it at the dump in a special section and let you drop it off there. If you have paint and hazardous waste stuff, like gasoline, you know, that kind of stuff, oil from cars, that kind of thing, lighter fluid for barbecues, any of that kind of stuff, call your local transfer station or the local dump and see what their rules are. They should be pretty generous. If you show them your ID and you're a resident, they should be pretty generous in letting you take that over and get rid of it. And then it gets disposed of in the proper way. We have bagged up a lot of stuff. Like when we go into garages and stuff, and people will have cans of WD-40 or Off or who knows, you know, little paint cans, touch-up paint spray cans and stuff. We have thrown those. Typically, we'll throw those in bags and take them to the dump as trash and just get rid of them as trash because we don't have the time, and they don't belong to us as the original owners. But we do clean that out for people because otherwise they have to run it over to someplace, and it's just kind of a hassle to do that with all this little stuff. But with cans of paint, especially 5-gallon containers of paint, we always encourage people to take those yourself over to the local recycling place. They should be able to let you drop it off for free if you just show them some identification, and that's a good way to get rid of it. But we also check these cans, these metal cans of paint that are 1-gallon cans of paint. A lot of those don't have much paint left in them, and they're basically an empty can. If that's the case, we'll take it over to the scrap metal yard and recycle it as scrap metal, and that works out well. So we've done both. We continue to do both, try to do whatever we can to help people out, but just be aware that hazardous waste stuff is bad for the environment, and if you check with your local landfill, they'll tell you the rules on what you can and can't do, and if they're as good in your area as they are in Montgomery County, Maryland, they will help you out tremendously, which is what they do here. They really are good here in all that respect of how to get rid of some of that stuff. I want to talk about Easter just because my Easter Sunday was so awesome. We had a special program at church. Normally at church we go for 2 hours. We go for a regular service meeting for an hour where we're all together as a congregation, and then we alternate weeks. Some weeks we have another hour where we do Sunday school classes. Other weeks, we have an hour where we split up the men and the women, and the men go to a priesthood meeting, the women go to what we call a Relief Society meeting, and we kind of alternate those. Well, for Easter, we just did one meeting, 1 hour, special program. They asked yours truly to sing a duet with a friend of mine named Eric, who joined the church about 2 months ago who has a brilliant bass voice, and they asked us to sing a certain song. Well, we were talking, Eric and I were talking about getting together to rehearse it last Wednesday night, which would have been a week ago yesterday. But my schedule was busy at work. His schedule didn't work out, and our accompanist couldn't make it. Then we tried for Friday. That didn't work again because I was so busy, and the accompanist was busy. So Sunday, at the meeting, Eric walks into the meeting, the 12 o'clock meeting, at about 12:05, and sits down. I'm already there. And after a few minutes, I went over and grabbed him and kind of took him out in the hallway. We went into a little, classroom off the hallway. And using the song that was on my phone and playing the accompaniment through the phone, we sang through one verse of the song. And boy, did it sound pretty darn good. Eric knew the song better than I did. He knew the song by heart. He sang the bass part. I sang the melody. I sang the harmony and kind of made it up as I went. We sang through one verse. We went back into the regular meeting. And about 5 minutes later, it was time in the program for us to sing. We go up front. We've only gone through it once with one verse. The accompanist starts to play. We sing all four verses, and people loved it. And when we were done, I put my arm around Eric, and I leaned over to him, and I said, that was fabulous. And it was a big hit. People really liked it. So to the extent that you're invited to participate in some of these activities, let your voice ring out and have a great time. And then our church pastor, our bishop, gave a brilliant talk, one of the best talks that I've heard in 60 plus years of going to church, that talked about a couple of events in Jesus's life where, on the one hand, he raises a 12-year-old daughter of the ruler of a local synagogue, brings her back to life, and while proceeding to do that, a woman who has had a blood issue for some 12 years reaches out and touches his garment as he's walking by, and she is healed. And this idea of he was there to help a young person, he was there to help an old person. The bishop then recited to us a true story about how his third child, a young daughter, was born 2 or 3 years ago. And at the same time, there was an older woman in the local hospital in Washington who was from California, who had come out here for a weekend, ended up having a problem, went into the hospital, and the daughter from California called and said, can you go visit my daughter over there and give her a blessing? Well, the bottom line is, within about 48 hours, the elderly lady in the hospital passed away, and at the same time, the bishop's third child, a new little daughter, was born. And he went on to just talk about how, regardless of the pluses or minuses that are happening in your life, regardless of your age, Jesus is there with you at both the beginning and the end. And that he was there with, all of these people in the stories that I just told, both before and after they contacted whatever ailment ailed them, and he was there for them in life or in death. It was just such a brilliant Easter talk, and it was given with a lot of power. And I will tell you that in our congregation, as a general rule, you don't hear applause in a congregation at our church very often. We just don't do that as a culture in our church. But when this guy finished his talk, his powerful talk on Sunday, there was a round of applause that just spontaneously erupted in the crowd that was louder and more sustained than anything that I've heard in 60 years in one of our church meetings. And I came home from that kind of relieved that our song went so well, thrilled that the talks were so good. After the meeting, we all went out on the grass by the church and had lunch, which was fabulous. And I basically took a video of a bunch of these people in line to go through the line to get some food. And I just spontaneously said, these are some of the best people on the planet right here in this line going to get food. People came up to Eric and myself afterwards, told us how much they enjoyed the musical number. One of my friends recorded it and put it up on Facebook. And that was fun for me to hear what we sounded like and to watch it myself. But I went back home after that church service on Sunday, you know, busy working from Monday through Saturday night, a little worried about this musical number because we hadn't been able to rehearse it. We rehearse it for a couple of minutes before we actually perform it. Then the performance goes great. People loved it and came up to us. You know, people sent me text messages afterwards telling me how much they enjoyed it. You know, et cetera. And I saw the bishop the next couple of days. I said, hey, your talk was one of the best that I've ever heard. And he kind of cut me off and he said, your musical number was one of the best that I've ever heard. So I just remember the feeling Sunday afternoon, Easter Sunday, after going back home, lying down on the bed and finally kind of catching my breath for the weekend. I just remember the feeling of how happy I was. And how gratified I was, and knowing that the song worked out great, people really enjoyed it, we sounded good together, we didn't have to rehearse it six times, you know, before we did it. It just worked. And that Sunday morning before our meeting started, I caught the bishop in the hallway, and he had texted Eric and I on Thursday. He said, hey, just want to make sure you guys will be able to get together and everything's good with this number. Well, we were planning to get together on Friday, so I said, yeah, it looks good. Everything's good. I told him Sunday morning, about 15 minutes before the start of the meeting, I said, hey, by the way, we haven't been able to get together yet. I just want to let you know. And I don't know for sure if Eric's going to be here and if this is going to be a solo done by me or if he's going to be here and we're going to do a duet. I just don't know. I just thought I'd let you know because I'm not really sure what's going to happen here. Well, in his wisdom, this wonderful bishop turned to me. He said, you know what? I'm sure it's all going to work out just fine. He said, don't worry if there's a little bit of stress. That's what Easter's all about. There's a little bit of stress, but it always seems to work out just fine. Well, he couldn't have called it more accurately than he did. And we had a wonderful time. The joy that I felt when I was back home Sunday afternoon, I will never forget, and I just think it's a fabulous thing to have that kind of a feeling in your life that you've made a small contribution in some way. You did your best to help out when you were asked to help out. You had the faith to give it a shot, even though the preparation time wasn't perfect. And sure enough, everything worked out just fine. It all came together and it worked. And that's what you want in life. And sometimes it feels like you're not going to get that. But if you hang in there and just do your best and give it the best shot that you can, that's all you can do. And that is success if you simply do the best that you can do. I want to tell you about one experience I had the last couple of weeks. I was up in Canada visiting a couple of our church temples that are up in there. We have one in Nova Scotia, one in Toronto, one in Winnipeg. I went up on one trip for 48 hours and went to all three of those. And the last one was in Winnipeg. And this is, I guess, a little bit of a testimonial to what a small world it is and to how doing good things, in this case some religious stuff, doing good things brings family and friends together. I have never been to Winnipeg, Canada. I went there, flew in from Toronto, I think the afternoon, like a Friday afternoon of a week ago, something like that, and checked into a hotel, called the hotel where I'm a diamond member of this hotel chain. I called them to get their airport shuttle, you know, to come pick me up at the Winnipeg airport. It was only a mile away from the hotel. I called three times. Nobody answered at the front desk of the hotel. I thought, well, bag this, I'll just walk. So I walked a mile over to the hotel, and got in my room, realized that I could still go over to our church temple the next morning, but I didn't have to be there at 9 o'clock. I could delay it, change the appointment time to more like 12 o'clock. Gives me some extra time to sleep. So I did that. That made me feel great. When I walked in the next day, there is a guy there that is the president of the temple who has been asked by the church to oversee the operations of the temple for 3 years. He was there. He greeted me when I walked in. His name tag said president, and I always love to bump into the presidents of these temples and ask them, you know, what's the biggest thing they've learned in their service as a president. We started talking. He asked me where I'm from. I said, Washington, D.C. He told me that he'd only been on the job about 7 months and that he had went through some training about 8 months earlier with about 70 other couples who were also being asked to preside over these various temples. I asked him if he knew Peter Christensen, a good friend of mine who presides over the temple in Washington, D.C. They would have been in the same training class. He lit up and said, of course, yes, I know Peter. And then he said, in fact, his cousin Mike is here doing volunteer work this morning. Would you like to meet him? I thought, well, yeah, sure. I didn't have any plans for Winnipeg for the rest of the day. I had about 12 hours in Winnipeg, and I had no plans of what to do. Well, here comes Mike. They introduce me to Mike, and boy, that's all I needed. Mike starts telling me stories about my buddy Peter, what he was like in high school, college, and a bunch of other times in his life. And these were fascinating stories. Then Mike takes me out for lunch to A&W, which we don't have a lot of those in the Washington, D.C. area, but I had a boatload of them out in Utah where I grew up. So I always like to go to A&W. Well, Mike takes me to a local A&W. They got them all over in Winnipeg. And we get the Uncle something burger we got, which was great. And so we have lunch there, and then Mike says, hey, I got to take you to my favorite ice cream place, which is called the Bridge Drive-In. And then they create the acronym BDI, BDI Ice Cream. So you go to this ice cream place, there's like 40 people in line and circulating around there. It's called Bridge Ice Cream because there is a bridge that spans, I'm going to call it the Winnipeg River. I don't know what it's called. There's a pretty good-sized river there, and I think there are two or three other rivers that come together and then go downstream, and this bridge is a critical bridge there that spans these rivers. Well, the ice cream shop is right on the edge of the river next to the bridge, hence the name of the ice cream shop. And they come out with, I'm watching people come away from the window with all kinds of ice cream concoctions. There was an item there, and I can't remember what it's called, but we'll call it the Big and Little, but it has a regular-sized ice cream cone, then a bunch of ice cream piled on top of that with sprinkles and chocolate. Then on top of that ice cream, there is a mini ice cream cone stuck into the top of the ice cream with ice cream inside that with, you know, chocolate and sprinkles above that. So you get like the baby ice cream cone on top of the father or mother ice cream cone. And I took a picture of that one because I thought it was so cool. Mike treats me to ice cream there, and it was fabulous. I got something I'd never had before. They have all these creative ice cream flavors. I got a hot caramel shake. Now, that was cool. I've never tried that before, never had it offered to me before. But this was fabulous, and I now have the cell phone number of my buddy Mike up in Winnipeg, and I've made a new friend all because common church-related stuff, and it just emphasizes what a small world it is. I flew from Winnipeg back to Toronto and then Toronto back to D.C. and was able to complete my 3-temple religious journey in 48 hours. And I've now been to all of our church temples in Canada. We have 9 of them up there. I've been to 8 of them. The other one is in a city that I can't remember off the top of my head. Regina, which is closed right now until October. That particular building is closed. So I can't go to any more, but up in Canada until October or November. Anyway, take the time in your life to strengthen the spiritual side of your life in whatever way you want to do it. Keep the process of decluttering your life alive and keep your life simple. And remember that if you work with some hoarders, be patient and don't push them or it'll backfire and it just won't work well. Just support them and help them and be patient, and you'll have success. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next Thursday for another episode of the Junk Refund Show. Thanks to BBS Radio and to Don and Doug Newsom for all they do. And we've enjoyed having you. Next Thursday, 3 o'clock, Junk Refund Show right here on BBSRadio.com. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.